Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Larry Sweet, the NASA Chief Information Officer. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, a couple things. It's been about 3 years since I've actually had the official NASA CIO on my program, and there's been a lot going on. You've obviously been here for about a year or a little bit over a year, so you've made some changes. So, but I want to go back to some older priorities from when I talked to, I guess it was Linda Kiraton before you, back in 2012. And one of them, obviously, is the I-3P program. It's the biggest program probably NASA's done in decades. Let's just talk about what the status of that program is, how is it working, and the differences and benefits it's making for NASA.
First off, it's working pretty well. We're about 3 years into that program, and the program consists of about four major contracts that we put in place. The first one is our ACES contract, which is the Agency Consolidated End User Services contract for end user devices. The second contract was called NICS, our NASA Integrated Communication Services contract. Third was EAST, the Enterprise Apps Services Technologies contract. And the fourth was our WEST contract, the Web Enterprise Services and Technology contract. We also use a NASA shared service for our Enterprise Service Help Desk. So those four contracts plus the shared service center make up our I-3P program. We've had some typical transition issues during our first couple years, like all contracts typically have. This was a significant departure from our previous contract called ODIN. It was the NASA Outsourcing Desktop Initiative, and it was structured quite a bit different. And so that caused some challenges that we've had to work through the first couple of years. But we're, now that we're through that, we're on the side of this transition that's working quite well. So we're happy with it. And it's causing us to be more efficient, to be more secure, and to have a more affordable contract.
I followed I-3P through all the ups and downs, the contract RFPs, the awards, the protests, the decision to maybe pull some back and go forward. When you look at this whole initiative, and you rarely see agencies go out with such a big pieces, and you broke this down to, as you said, five different pieces, really. Which one is having the biggest impact of ACES, NICS, EAST, and WEST in terms of people, the day-to-day NASA folks seeing it, in terms of how their IT is working?
Well, no question. I think that's called the ACES contract. It's our end-user services contract. We have almost 70% utilization of that contract across this agency. We're trying to get utilization up to 80 to 85% because we believe that the more enterprise services we roll out to our users, the better off we're going to be as an agency, the more secure we can be, and the most affordable product we can offer up. But that certainly is the contract that touches most of our employees across the agency.
You guys have also done a lot of great things with the cloud contract.
It's called our WEST contract. It's our Web Enterprise Services and Technology contract. And we've been really excited about that contract in that it has allowed all of our centers to use the capabilities of those web services and going into the cloud. It provides a common framework to securely go into the cloud for those services. And I think that we're most proud of that as we move more towards that type of contract structure.
Now, I know NASA has been very busy with the cloud contract. What sites have moved so far to the cloud, and how many, and anything else on the horizon?
We've migrated the NASA.gov website to the cloud and more than 100 other sites and applications to the cloud. And by doing so, we've achieved considerable cost savings in the process. And we've also achieved some consistency across the board. We're trying to minimize the number of sites that we have out. NASA has quite a few websites out. And obviously, that's a lot to maintain over time. So this allows us to be more consistent and to be able to consolidate some of those websites.
You talk about some savings. Are you able to quantify that yet? I mean, I know the contract's only a few years old, so it's the comparison maybe is hard to do so because sometimes there's that upfront cost. But would you get a sense of how much money?
Yeah, I think right now we've been talking about a 25% savings in terms of our operations and some of our maintenance costs. And it's a little bit of a guess at this stage. Those are hard costs to actually accumulate over time. But we consider about a 25% savings we've been able to receive.
And I know a lot of times, even if the savings is not huge, the agility, the security, the speed by which you can bring things up, that's the real difference maker in the cloud. Is that the other benefits when you talk about the efficiencies and the security side?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, security, obviously, cybersecurity is an important aspect of what NASA is trying to deal with. We are a target for a lot of folks. And having websites protected, doing that in a consistent way is very critical to our ability to protect our information and assets.
Two other contracts associated with I3P, the NICS contract, the EAST contract. Just go over through those just real briefly about what kind of stands out to you about them and the impact they're having on NASA.
The NICS contract, again, is our communication services contract. And when you look at NASA, we have a large network, and we're trying to consolidate that network down to a more manageable size. We've had multiple networks at centers for many, many years. It's evolved over time, and this contract allows us to consolidate the networks so that we're all operating on the same platform, trying to accomplish security in terms of our communications and protect ourselves as best we can. And I think we've made some significant progress on that contract. The other one you mentioned was the EAST contract, and that's our enterprise applications contract. And we have some business applications that we've put down in that contract down at Marshall Space Flight Center. And we're trying to expand that across all other centers for any application development project they may have, trying to, again, get some uniformity and security built into those applications, doing it in a smart way so that we can also see some cost savings with applications.
And when you talk about the NICS contract and communication networks, we talk about basic infrastructure, kind of the backbone, that kind of the data, the voice, the video, all that runs on?
That's correct. We're talking mainly about the infrastructure for the networks. When we talk about communications, that also includes our phone system, and we've been moving towards a voice over IP phone system for the last few years, and we believe that we've made some significant progress there. Obviously, it's expensive to move the infrastructure to a new platform like IP. I believe we've done a really good job doing that given our reduced budget environment that we are consistently dealing with every single year. It does not allow us to move quickly into an IP environment, but I think we're probably right around the 20 to 25% range complete. And so we're working budgets for the next couple, 3 years to get us to 100% completion rate.
All right, you stole my next question. I was going to ask, what's your end goal? But 100% over the next 3 years. So I promise we'll have you on the show before those 3 years ending so we can catch up there. As far as the EAST contract, you touched upon the apps development. You know, my government policy radar goes off and says, oh, you must be talking about DevOps, right? But is that part of this EAST contract?
It is. Mostly what we have in this EAST contract, though, are our big business and financial applications. We are extending that, like I mentioned, to center applications. We do have a lot of applications across NASA. Every center historically have developed their own applications, and so we're trying to have this as an enterprise application development contract, and so that centers can capitalize on that ability that this EAST contract will have. It's up for renewal, and so we're expanding the scope of that contract to accommodate that growth.
All right, so let's stop the vendors in their tracks. Give me as much as you can about that renewal, the recompete. What's the status of it, acquisition strategy? Anything you can tell us, because we're going to save you some phone calls.
Yeah, it's actually in the phase of procurement now, and it's being finalized as we speak. And so I think that our vendors are fully aware of it. That if they're not, then maybe it's not a contract for them. But yeah, absolutely. It's a contract in its procurement phase, and we should be seeing it coming out fairly soon. And then it goes through the typical procurement process to get proposals in and then awarded.
All right, very good. Again, just want to save you some hassle, so the phone calls and the emails from our vendor friends. Let me jump over to another piece of I3P that kind of fell out and then maybe it's coming back in. There was some move around data center consolidation. I think there's another of those east-west type contracts for data center consolidation. Then Unites, I think, became part of that as well. Can you give us a status update on those? What's your thinking around data center consolidation, Unite?
Yeah, actually, there was a initiative to have a data center, a consolidated data center contract put in place, just like the ACES and the NICS and the EASE contract. It was decided, though, not to continue with that. The environment of cloud and data center consolidation was a fairly complex environment a few years ago. We didn't have a lot of clarity at the time. So NASA decided not to continue with that contract structure. And instead, we focused on doing more data center consolidation at centers. We set a target of taking our then known 79 data centers that were sprinkled across the centers and reducing those down to 22. And we're close to that target today. It would be my vision that eventually we'll get to a point where we'll have only one data center facility at a center, and maybe even going to regional data centers instead of even having one at each center. I think a lot of our data requirements can go into the cloud. We've been a little bit slow in adopting the cloud, just making sure that it's matured to a degree that we can use it and do it in a secure way. But I think we've made a lot of progress towards that. And I think that we're finding that a lot of our data centers, through consolidation, through virtualization, we can get the footprint down and meet a federal requirement for reduced footprint for data centers with the 22 that we now are achieving.
All right, very good news. Sounds like progress has been made across the whole I3P spectrum. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about older priorities and we'll jump into some newer priorities. My guest today is Larry Sweet, the NASA Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Larry Sweet, the NASA Chief Information Officer. Now, Larry, before break, we were talking about older priorities, specifically the I3P program, which probably doesn't feel that much of an old priority because it's ongoing and probably never ending. But let's jump to another priority. You kind of gave us a little bit of a heads up on the VoIP, the move to voice over IP. When I talked to the NASA CIO a couple years back, she was talking about taking advantage of cloud or other as a service initiatives. Talk about where NASA is in terms of taking advantage of it, whether it's email or collaboration or whatever as a service.
Yeah, that's a good question. And NASA is looking at doing more services in the cloud. We currently have a resident email system, and we're looking at how we can do email in the cloud. We're exploring right now some of the major products out there like Google and like Microsoft, trying to build the right business case to move forward. Probably looking at something in the next couple years would be my vision for moving into the cloud with our email and with our collaboration tools and software. I think that we've reached a maturity level at an industry where there's a number of agencies that have made the move and have justified the migration. Obviously, a size of NASA geographically dispersed at multiple centers, it's not an easy transition for us to make. We have a customer base that's fairly comfortable with the way we're operating today, and it makes for a harder argument to make change, especially one that may initially cost us some, but we believe we can realize some cost savings by going into the cloud for some of these services. So I think you'll see us explore that a little bit more aggressively in the next year or so.
You brought up a little bit the size and geography of NASA, plus the culture. Are those really the bigger issues than the technology itself?
Yeah, I don't think it's the technology at all. As a matter of fact, I think the technology is mature enough that we can see what makes the most sense for us. I think it's a matter of moving in a smart way, looking at the other priorities that we do have, and building the right case for change and then the timing of that change. And I think that's what we're doing right now.
Are there some pilots yet out there at some of the centers that have moved email to cloud, have consolidated email? Because it's one of those very popular things that you see maybe in some pockets.
I think that we do have a unified email system today. I think where we are seeing pockets evolve is with some of these collaboration tools. You know, we typically use SharePoint to a significant degree, and we have a number of instances of those. where we can certainly consolidate and make more efficient. I do think there's a lot of other cloud services that folks at the centers are using, and rightfully so. We need to try to offer those in an enterprise environment as best we can. But the IT environment is changing so rapidly, it's hard for us from a corporate level, from a headquarters level, from an enterprise level to stay up on it as quickly as we'd like. So we are trying to do it in a smart way. We're trying to be secure with it. Make sure that the tools that we put in place are the right tools and that will save us money and meet the goals and objectives that we have for ourselves in the future. So saying that, sometimes it means that we're a little bit slower out of the blocks, but we try to be sure-footed when we make those kinds of decisions.
You talk about collaboration, email. With the I3P contracts, just to tag back to that, the idea of DevOps, any idea of putting, you know, test and development in the cloud, is that part of maybe the newer contract that's coming out?
You say newer contract. It's not a newer contract. I mean, we have the I3P contracts that I mentioned, and it's a matter of placing some of these changes in the most appropriate contract. And so it could be our West contract, our web applications contract. It could be our East contract. Like I said, the ACES contract is our end user services. So a lot of these changes affect that contract. And when you affect a contract of that size, it takes a while to work out the procurement language and work the negotiation and then the costs.
You mentioned cybersecurity, I think, earlier a couple of times about the security of the cloud and the move to some of the, how the contract is giving you some better security. NASA definitely got dinged over the last few years from Congress oversight bodies around its cybersecurity. Back in 2012, I talked to the deputy CIO at the time, Gary Cox, who has since retired, about doing a SWOT, a strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats around cybersecurity and the idea of balancing risk. Can you talk a little bit about where NASA is with its cybersecurity program and whether or not that SWOT helped you kind of lay the groundwork for moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that SWOT, we did that as well as a couple other IT security program assessments. We also received some information from the Inspector General's office who did an audit on us. And so we took those findings and we incorporated into some improvements. And a number of improvements we've made, we've implemented some real-time and continuous monitoring capabilities and some tools that we now are using. We updated our network access controls. We adopted a number of security requirements for cloud computing. We strengthened our approach for managing IT vulnerabilities. And we expanded the web application scanning. So we scanned those operations. We deployed intrusion prevention and detection systems. And then we partnered with the Department of Homeland Security on their continuous diagnostics and mitigation program. It's a program they're offering up to a number of federal agencies, and we took advantage of that, trying to build a strong partnership that will provide capabilities to fill the gaps in our continuous monitoring program.
There's a lot of concern from every CIO I speak with about cyber. I mean, you can't shake a stick without another news report of someone getting hacked or at least attempted. I was speaking with the Veterans Affairs CIO just recently, part of a press conference he did. He talked about that the VA suffered 1 billion attempted attacks, whether it's malware or pings against its network or over the last, you know, month or so. Is NASA seeing the same rate of attempts, the same rate of noise, if you will, and then how do you achieve that right balance, the risk piece?
Yeah, when you ask me what keeps me up at night, IT security, cybersecurity is certainly one of those. The rate of attacks has grown exponentially for NASA because I do think that we are one of those more popular targets. Hackers like to brag that they've broken into NASA or would like to at least brag on that. And so we see that. We're very visible across the world. So we know that we get attacked a lot. And so we want to make sure that we protect ourselves as best we can. We do have a security operations center that's out at Ames. They monitor our networks. And when we see a lot of extra noise, they can help us identify that and put in the appropriate blocks, which we do. And we keep the SOC very, very busy. And it is almost impossible to protect ourselves 100%. We now focus a lot on detection and recovery. And because we know that we cannot protect ourselves 100%, if we lock everything down, shut everything down so we can't get access to the internet, yeah, then we probably can be protected but we have to risk manage. We try to manage our risk in a smart way and try to look for areas that perhaps won't cause a lot of damage to NASA infrastructure if we don't tighten it down to nothing. And so we constantly assess that, look at the balance, continue to partner with, again, the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI, and try to make sure that we're being smart about protecting NASA information.
I want to go back to the beginning of the conversation when I said you guys have gotten dinged several times from auditors, Congress, and the like. Do you feel like you're satisfying their concerns as much as possible? I mean, it's a tough road. We know that it's nearly impossible to make anyone 100% happy. We'll start with that part of the question. But do you feel like that the progress you're making is obviously heading down the right track? And is there more that you feel like what's next around cybersecurity to continue to alleviate any concerns that not just they have, but really anyone has?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would never presume to know what satisfies Congress. But I do think that we have made the right progress in the right direction. We are doing, I think, what they expect us to do in terms of protecting NASA information. And I think that the more we partner with other federal agencies and the Department of Defense and with industry will get us to a better posture. I think it's always going to be a tricky, slippery slope, because you have to find that balance. And sometimes the way you find the balance is you don't secure something as sufficiently as you should have. And you make adjustments, you fix it, and you move forward. And I don't think we're ever going to get truly in front of it, because the environment is just changing too rapidly. I think it's always going to be discovery and response that will get us to where we think we need to be in the future.
When I talked with the NASA CIO back in 2012, there was an initial pilot that was just starting using really the Google Cloud to reduce the sign-on capability, almost a single sign-on capability. Whatever happened with that effort? And it was just a pilot, so pilots come and go. Talk more broadly about the use of HSPD-12 smart cards. NASA, when I used to cover this more regularly, was always kind of the thought leader in this process.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a pilot that we had, and actually we're continuing on with the Google pilot. Making good progress with that. We are using smart card technology quite a bit at NASA. Obviously, one of the challenges is leaving your card in the machine when you walk away for the end of the day. So that's something we're working on. But it is good technology. It doesn't apply to all the platforms yet. We still struggle with some of our platforms. Our Microsoft platforms, our PCs are working quite well. And so we have a ways to go to become 100%. And we think that with that focus over the next year, we're going to get closer and closer to that 100%. But it is helping us with single sign-on. I don't know about you, but I hate having so many passwords that I need to remember. It is a big maintenance task to keep up with passwords, and passwords aren't as protected as a lot of people think they are. So having credentials on a smart card is the way to go.
Are you guys seeing, the fact is that most centers have the single sign-on, you're moving headquarters in that direction, are you already seeing the cyber benefits of a card? I mean, forget the usernames and passwords, the help desk piece of people forgetting their passwords, and even, let's for a second, forget the culture piece of you've got to remove your card, you got to bring your card to work, all those challenges of people, but just the technology and the cyber piece, is that making NASA more stronger?
Yeah, it's certainly helping protect us and our equipment. It's interesting. You shore up one area and another area shows to be another vulnerability. And obviously, phishing is one of those vulnerabilities that we seem to be struggling with, much more than having smart cards in our machines. But certainly having the protections in place like smart cards will help shore up that side of our vulnerabilities. The phishing email is very popular right now, and a lot of our attackers are becoming very sophisticated. And it doesn't take too much for a user or a customer to see an email that is a phishing email and not recognize it as an email. And before they know it, they've entered some information in on that phishing attack, and it can actually download malware and spread quickly. So that's one of the things that we're focusing on a lot now with our resources, educating our users, trying to train them in a way that they identify these phishing emails and not enter information into them. But that's, as you might expect, it's a very difficult thing when you have so many users and the sophistication of the phishing is such that it's difficult to tell. I I mean, I look at some of them and I wonder sometimes if it's legitimate or not. So that's one of the things that we're focusing on now, because it is a big vector attack that comes in, and we're not alone. NASA's not alone on that. It's affecting everybody.
You almost have to go back old school and actually pick up the phone and call someone and go, hey, did you send me that email? Because you go, that looks real, but there's maybe something not quite right, or I wasn't expecting this type of email from that person. Is that part of the education? Do you have things that pop up? Do you have, if you will, fake phishing attacks to kind of help educate people?
Yeah, we do that exactly. We do a lot of testing. We'll test about 20% of our employees routinely, maybe 3-4 times a year. And when they click on one of the test phishing emails, instantly will pop up a little training segment for them to fill out. And we're learning from that as well. What are the indicators that would cause a user to click on a phishing email? We do have ways of countering that, trying to protect our users from themselves, in a sense, using digital signature. Encrypted digital signatures will help. We don't have that technology out to everybody yet, but that's certainly one way to do that. And then there's some phishing tools out there that will automatically protect across the enterprise that we're exploring right now that help mitigate some of the phishing attacks that we're seeing.
All right, very good. Let's take a quick break. My guest today is Larry Sweet, the NASA Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Vote anytime at federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Larry Sweet, the NASA Chief Information Officer. Okay, Larry, we spent the whole show so far talking about older priorities. Let's jump into new priorities. What are you trying to get done? What are you looking forward to over the next 6 or 9 months?
Sure. First and foremost, let me just say that NASA IT exists to enable our missions and our programs. We're not here for ourselves. We're here to help NASA move forward in the future. So in that regard, I want IT services to be effective, cost efficient, secure, and maybe most important of all is affordable. And so my top priority is to expand the use of enterprise services. I've initiated a program called Enterprise First. That's where we focus first and foremost on our enterprise services. And I've already mentioned the I3P contracts that we have in place. So I want NASA users to first consider the I3P program and consider the services that we offer there. And then we have a shared service center. And I'm a believer in using shared services for a lot of reasons. One is that they can offer a more affordable service to NASA, generally speaking. And I want to try to get us up to that 80 to 90% use of commodity-based IT that's offered through these enterprise services and the shared service center. Another top priority is meeting our increased demand on the provision of mobile IT and going into the cloud. Going into the cloud allows us to become more mobile. We're not necessarily tied to one center service once it exists in the cloud. So we want to move in that direction. Becoming more mobile allows us to be more competitive as an agency. Obviously, the younger generation that's coming into the work environment are mobile. They've grown up with electronic devices. And so that's the way they think and that's the way they work. And we want to be able to enable them to work for us so that we can move forward with the new NASA of the future. And so becoming mobile, and that brings us to BYOD, bring your own device. We believe that that is something that we can enable in the NASA environment. Obviously, it has its challenges. We're not there yet. We do have some guidelines we put out because a lot of our users have their own cell phones and mobile devices that they would like to connect. So we're allowing a limited means of connection as long as they can prove to us that they're following some of our guidelines in terms of use of the information on their personal devices. Next, I do believe that big data analytics is a priority for us. NASA creates a lot of information every year. We have a lot of satellites that bring down information. We have a space station. We have rovers on Mars that produce a lot of data. And so obviously the challenge that NASA has is how do we manage that data? How do we make it available and make it in a format that others can use it? Big data is where that challenge is for us. How can we provide big data resources to our customers, to our universities who use our data, to other governments, and then to the public? And we're trying right now with a data strategy that will hopefully get us there, make that data more usable for anybody who needs it.
All right, a lot of priorities. Let me back up for one. You talk about shared services. You talk about the new program, Enterprise First. I'm going to have to play devil's advocate with you for a second and say, why not just mandate it? Why not just sign off a memo, have your administrator sign a memo and say you must use it unless you can justify why you can't use it?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why that program may not work best. NASA has a lot of engineers and scientists, and they have some very unique requirements that may not be met best with an enterprise service. So recognizing that, it's hard for us to mandate the use of that. I do think that initiating a program where that is first consideration and stressing the importance of that is the most appropriate way to get compliance to that policy. We do actually have some guidelines out there, short of maybe a hard policy, but we are moving in that direction so that it will be first consideration. And then waiver out. If you have requirements that aren't met, identify those and we can waiver out of that program. NASA also uses the SEWP contract, which is a federal procurement mechanism that is in place today. There's a new SEWP 5 coming out, I think, this summer. And if you look at the products and services offered under SEWP, it's quite reasonable and affordable. So again, if enterprise services aren't there to meet your needs best, second consideration should be SEWP. If and then we don't have requirements that can be met, maybe there's more local services that can provide those IT-based services to folks at the centers.
I guess when we talk about something that's specific to NASA, like a space center that does a very unique mission that maybe nobody else does, that would make sense not to mandate them to use Enterprise. But as you talked about getting to the goal of 80-90% of all NASA buying commodity IT through the shared services centers, that seems logical. And you seem to be heading down that path anyways with the I3P contract.
That's absolutely true. And like I said, I think we're right around 70% as an agency, which is actually pretty good. I think that we can improve that number. We have a few centers that aren't at the 80% level, and we have some that are over at 80%. So I think that we're moving in that direction. Centers, users see the value in going to enterprise services. They do see that it's a more secure environment. And the closer you can get to a one type of environment, the simpler the environment is to manage, the more efficiently you can secure it. So I do think that centers see the value of going to enterprise services. I think it's just a matter of finding what requirements are best met through an enterprise service or something else like SEWP.
And when you talk about enterprise services, are you talking in some ways about a managed service, a private cloud? I mean, there's a lot of different synonyms out there for what this is. Or is it just the fact that everyone's buying it from the same contract, so they're getting at least a baseline set of requirements?
Yeah, it's more so the second that you just mentioned. These I3P contracts I talked about, they are agency-wide, so they're at every center. And obviously, when you tap into that contract at a center, you get the volume discounting. You get the full seat management that comes with those contracts. And so the standardization and efficiency is gained by everybody, to the extent possible, using those enterprise services.
Oh, you went old school on us and brought up seat management. We don't hear that term too much anymore. We miss it. Let me move over to mobility for a second. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that there's this increased demand for mobility. Imagine NASA's like every other agency where people want to use tablets and smartphones, get on the wireless network. How are you moving into that direction? And then we'll go to BYOD as well, but I think they're, in some ways, even though they're related, two separate discussions. Talk a little bit about how to make things more mobile first.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that we have a huge demand for mobility. Everybody at NASA, we got some very smart users. We've got rocket scientists who work for us. Very smart, very IT savvy. And so everybody at NASA, most everybody has multiple mobile devices, cell phones, tablets, and PCs. probably not a lot of desktops out there anymore. Most folks have the mobile devices. So we know that there's an increased demand for that. And if we turn a blind eye to that demand, then we do ourselves a disservice. So we're trying to be smart about it. We're not trying to issue a bunch of devices. We're trying to find devices that can meet a number of requirements, mobile requirements, so that we can get one device that works for a user. Maybe it's a smartphone with a laptop. That combination will do it. Or it's a smartphone with a tablet. Trying to reduce the number of devices that folks seem to have today. And I do think that the technology is evolving. You're getting bigger smartphones that are becoming close to miniature tablets. And I think that's a good direction. I think eventually we'll be able to consolidate maybe down to one device per user, and it'll meet everybody's requirements. So we're looking at that aggressively. We have a chief technology officer, and that chief technology officer works with all the center CTOs, trying to look at the newest technology coming out and how that technology will meet the requirements of those users.
You talked a lot about the technology, the form factor, if you will. What about the back end, the app side? Because you could have the best tablet ever or the best mobile device ever, but if you can't reach back and connect in, then you just have the best tablet ever to play Angry Birds or whatever the popular game is now.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where our East contract comes in. The folks down at Marshall who run that contract are actually looking at mobile application development, coming up with an awful lot. We have a NASA store that users can tap into and download the latest and greatest mobile apps that we offer up. So that's certainly where we're going. Some centers are maybe moving quicker than we are in that regard. JPL, which is the Jet Propulsion Lab out at California, they've actually paved a lot of the way for us in terms of mobile apps development, and the folks out there are doing a really good job.
Do you find that many of NASA's legacy apps are ready to move to mobile, or is there a challenge there to move them from this, you know, thick client, fat client to either a thin client world or a cloud world or just a mobile world?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. You know, as more and more applications need to be upgraded, you know, obviously moving them, migrating them into a more mobile apps environment is what we look at doing. But we do have a lot of legacy applications that are thick and will remain so until we get to the point where we need to migrate them. Obviously, there's a cost component to it. It's time consuming to do that, and we need to do it in a smart way, and we have to prioritize those apps that maybe make the most sense to put in mobile format. So we are looking at that across the board. We are making, I think, great strides in upgrading our applications and moving them to more mobile platforms. It's just going to take NASA a little bit of time.
Very well. I think a lot of agencies are, again, in that same boat. Let's jump over to the other priority you mentioned, big data analytics. In fact, I think NASA is joining the other agencies, maybe looking at hiring a chief data officer or someone with that kind of experience, maybe a chief data scientist, or whatever you guys are going to call it. Can you kind of give me a sense of the big data piece, and then how does this CDO type person fit in?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have a position that we announced recently, a data management position. We've developed a data strategy that takes a look at where we're trying to go with big data and data analytics, trying to be smart about moving forward. We are working closely with our science and our human exploration organizations on what kind of requirements they're going to have for their data. We do think that having a data architect and a data scientist on board is the right direction. It does mean that we need to change some of the IT services we offer today, some of the skill sets that we have on board today. Obviously, that's not something we can just turn a switch on and make happen overnight. So we need to be smart about it. We need to project our budget needs in the future for data management and big data, and we need to move in a smart way. And it's taken us a little while, but I think we're making the right kind of progress. We're starting to hire the right people. And we're working with a lot of other agencies trying to do some benchmarking. Some of them have chief data officers, and we're looking at that at NASA. It's not yet known if that would be part of the CIO organization or maybe a standalone reporting to the administrator. So those are the kinds of areas we're kind of exploring today with our data strategy.
So the person you're hiring or the people you're hiring right now are the data management, data scientist types. that CDO, quote unquote, title may come later down the road, but that's not who you're really hiring currently.
Yeah, that's a step process. And obviously the first step is to do better data management and then have a strategy moving forward. What do we do with that? And we are evolving right now. We're working with a number of research firms and, like I said, trying to do some benchmarking. What is the best practice for other organizations? I mean, clearly our biggest asset is our data, so we want to be smart about making that available to the public.
Talk a little bit about the CDO-CIO role. I know you don't have a CDO role yet, but as you kind of work through that process, you have a chief information officer and you have a chief data officer, and there's no potential real difference between information and data in many regards. Can you walk me through why maybe it would kind of come under the CIO, why this person maybe wouldn't come under the CIO? Just initial thinking.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of energy right now about putting that position in the CIO because we're talking about a lot of IT. It's hard to separate it out when you're trying to modify or upgrade your systems to account for dealing effectively with data management. The first thing folks think about when you hear data management is data centers. It's where all the data resides on servers. And so it's an expansion of that. Obviously, it's a lot more than that. So I think there's a natural belief that the leadership of big data comes from the CIO because it is chief information. And chief data is not a far stretch from that. But I do think that as we focus on where we want to go with a data strategy, it doesn't necessarily need to reside within a CIO organization. And maybe it shouldn't. And that's something that we're trying to explore a little bit further and see where the benefits are if we do keep them separate or we keep them tightly coupled. And I think that it could work either way. Maybe it's a lot depends on, you know, the maturity. Maybe the first step is to do it, grow it out of the CIO organization and then see where it evolves. So we're not trying to jump too far ahead with those kinds of decisions. We're trying to allow it to evolve a little bit and again, look at best practices across the federal government.
All right, Larry, sounds like we could probably talk a lot longer, but unfortunately we are out of time. My guest today has been Larry Sweet, the NASA Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Larry, thank you so much for joining us today.
And thank you, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.